Coming up is the news.
People take to the streets across several European cities to protest soaring energy and food prices. Russia says three people have been killed following a massive blast which destroyed parts of the only bridge which connects Crimea to mainland Russia. And Palestinians hold funerals for three teenagers killed by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. Hello everyone, thanks for tuning in to World News. Our top story, people have rallied across several European cities to protest soaring energy and food prices. In the Czech Republic, thousands gathered in the capital, Prague, to protest what demonstrators are calling the government's inaction in addressing soaring inflation. They're demanding higher wages to afford rising prices. In the German capital, Berlin, a similar protest was organized by far-right groups. Demonstrators held banners and chanted slogans against the government. They're rejecting the government's policies in dealing with prices. Energy prices have soared in Europe, especially after Russia cut off its gas supplies to some European countries. Our correspondent in Brussels, Jerome Hughes, sheds more light on protests against soaring prices throughout Europe.
People are becoming more and more frustrated. Obviously, that's being fueled by the fact that we have cost of living crisis, rising inflation, rising interest rates, and people just feel that they are not being looked after by their political leaders. There's also a feeling that there's a lack of information. I mean, we keep hearing about the billions of euro that's being coming from the European Commission, the EU, you could say, the executive arm, to prop up the Ukrainian government and also to arm the Ukrainian military. That's coming from the EU. We do get some firm figures in relation to that. But then individual countries are providing huge amounts of weapons, hardware, and providing individual cash sums as well to Ukraine. So the overall picture is very, very cloudy indeed. And also we have a lack of information about the energy costs. I mean, we keep hearing and being told that the energy prices are going up and up. And yet then we get bits and pieces in the media about we're getting energy supplies from different parts of the world. Again, there's a certain amount of coordination from the European Commission in terms of buying energy, but then individual countries are going ahead and doing deals with countries. And again, the overall picture in relation to that is very shady as well. So people feel that they're not getting enough information. And also, you will hear commentators saying that people more and more feel let down by the mainstream media in the West.
Thousands of supporters of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange have formed a human chain outside the British Parliament, demanding the UK cancel plans to extradite Assange to the US to face charges, which could see him jailed for life. US is seeking to prosecute Assange for revealing American crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan wars. From London, Saeed Puruza has your story.
Linked hand in hand, thousands of men and women surround the British Houses of Parliament, a symbolic act in solidarity with a man they call the world's foremost political prisoner.
It's obvious for any observer, for anyone who is fairly looking at this situation, that this is an enormous, monumental injustice of a man who is being persecuted by the authorities, who are using the coercive powers of the state in order to try to punish him for doing the right thing.
That right thing was exposing American crimes and conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq, for which he is wanted by the U.S. government. The now 51-year-old Australian, co-founder of whistleblower website WikiLeaks, has been locked up in a maximum security prison near London since April 2019.
To his many supporters, Julian Assange is an anti-establishment hero who's been victimized, and that his prosecution is a politically motivated assault on journalism and on free speech.
Organized by the Don't Extradite Julian Assange campaign, the human chain is not just about securing one man's freedom.
This has implications for pretty much every journalist who publishes material critical of the United States. If he is actually extradited and they succeed, then any other journalist in the UK or from around the world could face the same fate as Julian Assange, which would, of course, would be a strong discouragement to them to publish any critical material, and we get something like a chilling effect, basically, whereby the press ceases to scrutinize foreign policy of the most powerful nation on the planet.
And that powerful nation, under the Trump administration, it was revealed last year, plotted to kidnap or kill Assange as he sheltered in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. Earlier this year, the UK government approved the father of two's extradition to the United States to face criminal charges, which carry a maximum sentence of 175 years. An appeal to the UK's High Court is underway. Assange's supporters say they won't relent until he is unchained. Saeed Purza, London.
A blaze sparked by a car bomb blast has hit a key bridge linking the Crimean Peninsula to mainland Russia. Moscow says it is investigating the incident.
The main investigation department of the Russian Investigative Committee has opened a criminal case about the incident at the Crimean Bridge. According to preliminary information, a truck was blown up on the automobile part of the Crimean Bridge from the Taman Peninsula. This led to the ignition of 7 fuel tanks of a train traveling toward Crimea, and as a result, 2 car roads of the bridge partially collapsed.
Russian investigators say at least 3 people have been killed as a result. They also say owner of the truck has been identified. Now, there's no media claim of responsibility, but chairman of the Crimean Republic State Council has blamed what he called Ukrainian vandals. Meanwhile, a Ukrainian presidential advisor has said that the explosion is the beginning and that everything illegal must be destroyed. Russia has reacted to that, saying that comment shows what it calls the terrorist nature of Ukraine. The bridge was opened in 2018. 4 years after Crimea joined Russia, and now serves as a key transport link for carrying military equipment to Russian soldiers fighting in Ukraine. While an attack on a bridge connecting Crimea to Russia threatens to escalate the Russia-Ukraine war, Johnny Miller brings us a report from a frontline position in the Donbas war zone in eastern Ukraine.
I'm heading with Donbas militia fighters to a frontline position outside the city of Donetsk. Ukrainian soldiers are only 70 meters away. I'm told not to film the skyline or any prominent markers so as not to give away their positions. The cramped living quarters are dark and dank. A fighter with a call sign Yidra, meaning the otter, gives me a tour.
We live here not in trenches, but under concrete. These are destroyed buildings that we've old basements. It is all dug out by hands, down the narrow passageways, and understand what it's like to be a miner. We live here, breathe this air. You can't survive artillery any other way. At least you can hide from snipers, but not from artillery. Big caliber artillery, too.
He shows me a picture sent to him by his daughter. I asked him what has motivated him to fight in these conditions for the last 8 years.
Because this is where I live. My mother lives 25 kilometers from here. I speak Russian. My mom and dad speak Russian. I was a miner here. It's my land.
A young fighter, barely 18. The grueling nature of this war is bringing a seamlessly endless wave of young men on both sides to fight. Thousands won't return home.
While the Ukrainians have been making advances in the north of the Donbas and the Kherson region, here on the front lines just outside Donetsk, it's very much trench warfare, where success is measured in meters rather than kilometers. It's pretty quiet here today. We have heard some small arms fire and some artillery. But I've been told that these trenches we're in now have changed hands many times over the last 8 years of war here.
A motivational poster. It reads, Donbass was never made to kneel by anybody, and nobody will be able to do it.
We
understand that the USA are ruling the circus. Europe needs to stop being their vassals. America doesn't care about others. Their only way is to be at war. And they build their domestic policy out of conflicts with other countries. In Syria, they played the card of radical Islam. and now they're playing the card of fascism. They need war's blood and cruelty, and they signed Europe up to it too. They missed only one thing, that Russia will not stop fighting.
While there is raging ethnic hatred of Russians in Ukraine, after interviewing dozens of soldiers and civilians in Donbass, despite the war, I've yet to hear any ethnic hatred of Ukrainians.
We don't blame all Ukrainian people. Ukrainian people are our friends and relatives. Those who study this understand that one-third of Europe are cousins. Ukrainians, Belarusians, Slovaks, Poles, and Slovenians. They're all Slovak people. Ordinary people are not to blame for this. We think they're just corrupted by evil.
Out many Ukrainians who want peace negotiations with Russia, but are scared to speak up. Indeed, President Zelensky was elected in 2019 of war in the East, but the sad truth is set to escalate further. Peace in Ukraine has never looked less likely than it does now. Johnny Miller, Donetsk.
Palestinians hold massive funerals in occupied West Bank for three Palestinians who were recently killed by Israeli forces. The city of Jenin, thousands took part in funerals of two Palestinians killed Saturday. Victims were both 17 years old and shot dead during an Israeli raid on the Jenin refugee camp, the focal point of recent crackdowns on Palestinians. Also in Ramallah, people mourned another 17-year-old killed on Friday. Israel has intensified its deadly crackdown against Palestinians. More than 100 Palestinians have been killed so far this year, making it the deadliest year since 2015. Now, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine has held a protest in solidarity with Palestinian prisoners who are on hunger strikes in Israeli prisons. People from all walks of life came out to support the prisoners. This because Palestinian prisoners see no end in sight to their suffering, as hundreds of them are being held without charge or trial under the Israeli regime's so-called administrative detention policy. Leader of Yemen's Ansarullah resistance movement has decried the normalization of ties with Israel as betrayal. Four Arab countries, including the UAE, agreed to normalize ties with the Tel Aviv regime about 2 years ago, in a move slammed as a stab in the back for Palestinians. Abdulmalik al-Houthi reiterated his country's support for Palestinians in the face of Israeli occupation. And regarding the war on Yemen, he urged the Saudi-led coalition to stop its aggression that it launched in 2015 and lift its crippling siege. The Ansarullah leader also called on Yemenis to continue to confront the Saudi war until the end. Al-Houthi made the comments in a speech on the occasion of the birth anniversary of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, which saw crowds of people celebrate across Yemeni cities.
People have rallied across the Yemeni capital Sana'a as well as other major cities to celebrate Prophet Muhammad's birth anniversary amid the highly alarming situation in Yemen. This comes days after the warring sides failed to renew a ceasefire agreement which ended earlier in October.
The relationship between the Yemeni people and Prophet, it is narrated in history books as well as the holy book Quran. Yemenis are the first to embrace Islam. Old relationship. The anniversary of Prophet Muhammad's birth has become a holiday for all Yemenis. There is no single about this gathering.
Participants say they celebrate Prophet Muhammad's values and principles by honoring his birth anniversary, especially amid the Saudi-led war, which requires Yemenis to follow the Prophet's footsteps in the face of the coalition's tyranny.
The occasion of the Prophet's birth anniversary becomes more important year after year. It has become the first occasion and the first aid for Yemenis, although it's an occasion that all Muslims celebrate. Unfortunately, only Yemenis celebrate this occasion with this beautiful gathering.
This day is an annual event in which Yemenis renew their relationship with Prophet Muhammad and their love for the Prophet, as he inspires us to confront the enemies of the nation. Today is also a political occasion from which the position of Yemenis is announced by the leader of the revolution, Abdulmalik al-Houthi.
Yemenis have always been one of the largest populations in the world to commemorate Prophet Muhammad's birth anniversary, as this day resembles their culture, which approves their love and loyalty to the Prophet.
North Korea has fired a ballistic missile into the sea amid heightened tensions over U.S.-led military drills in the region. The Japanese government has also confirmed the launch, saying missile has apparently fallen outside Japan's exclusive economic zone. Now, this is the seventh launch in just 2 weeks. Pyongyang has defended its missile test as a righteous action against direct U.S. military threat. The latest launch comes a day after joint drills held by the U.S. and the South. Earlier this week, the U.S. also held joint exercises with Japan. The Pyongyang considers those maneuvers as rehearsals for invasion. A group of Iranian researchers and scholars have taken part in a conference on Iranian history, literature, and culture. Yusuf Jalali was there.
The Iranology Foundation in Tehran hosted this conference to introduce Iran from the perspective of Iranian experts, as opposed to Western accounts of the country's culture and civilization. The biennial event brought together historians, anthropologists, and sociologists to aspects of Iran's
The Iranology Foundation has been trying to introduce Iran as it is to the world, organize summits and conferences on Iran's history to study the country from the viewpoint of Iranian. Here we have permanent galleries showcasing Iran's handicraft and art. We also hold classes for students who are major in Iranology.
Iran is known for its diverse demographic makeup, which has allowed Persians, Turks, Kurds, Baluchis, and Arabs to live together for centuries, each with their unique culture, costumes, language, and lifestyle.
The West's approach on Iran is not based on realities. The so-called Orientologists in the West have maintained a top-down approach toward Iran. Fortunately, today this mentality has been abolished. Our country is full of beauties, from its four seasonal weather and amazing landscapes to its history of peaceful coexistence of different ethnicities and religions. These are the realities that are not reflected in the West.
With a population of more than 80 million, Iran is situated on a geopolitical area, bordering the Caspian Sea to its north and the Persian Gulf to its part of what experts refer to as the heartland of natural resources, including those to exploitation by different countries, the UK and the former Soviet Union.
Experts here believe Western media portray Iran as an isolated country and ignore its beauties. They believe there's a need to reintroduce the country to the world using the pen of Iranian experts to shed light on the bright side of Iran, from its mesmerizing nature to its rich culture and history. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Experts are blaming big oil companies for climate change, and in particular, the recent Hurricane Ian, which caused destruction and suffering in the U.S. state of Florida. While oil executives are raking in astronomical profits, the issue of climate change and the tragedies it causes is out of the spotlight. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media for further details. Stay tuned for the second part. According to Guardian, Hurricane Ian is no anomaly. The climate crisis is making storms more powerful. climate change once seemed a distant threat. No more. We now know its face, and all too well. We see it in every hurricane, torrential rainstorm, flood, heat wave, wildfire, and drought. It's even detectable in our daily weather. Climate disruption has changed the background conditions in which all weather occurs. The oceans and air are warmer, there is more water vapor in the atmosphere, and sea levels are higher. Hurricane Ian is the latest example. Ian made landfall as one of the five most powerful hurricanes in recorded history to strike the U.S., and with its 150-mile-per-hour winds at landfall, it tied with 2004's Hurricane Charley as the strongest to ever hit the west coast of Florida. In isolation, that might seem like something we could dismiss as an anomaly or fluke, but it's not. It's part of a larger pattern of stronger hurricanes, typhoons, and superstorms that have emerged as the oceans continue to set record levels of warmth. Many of the storms of the past 5 years, including Harvey, Maria, Florence, Michael, Ida, and Ian, are natural disasters so much as human-made disasters, whose amplified ferocity is fueled by the continued burning of fossil fuels and the increase in heat-trapping carbon pollution, a planet-warming greenhouse gas. This Atlantic hurricane season, although it started out slow, has heated up thanks to unusually warm ocean waters. Fiona hit Puerto Rico as a Category 1 hurricane, subsequently strengthening to a powerful Category 4 storm, and hundreds of thousands of people that are still without power. The storm barreled on into the open Atlantic, eventually making landfall in the Maritime Provinces to become Canada's strongest ever storm. Then came Ian, which feasted on a deep layer of every warm water in the Gulf of Mexico. Human-caused warming is not just heating the surface of the oceans. The warmth is diffusing down into the depth of the ocean, leading to year-after-year record ocean heat content. That means that storms are less likely to churn up colder waters from below, inhibiting one of the natural mechanisms that dampen strengthening. It also leads to the sort of rapid intensification we increasingly see with these storms, where they balloon into major hurricanes in a matter of hours. Too often we still hear, even from government scientists, the old saw that we cannot link individual hurricanes to climate change. There was a time when climate scientists believed to be true, but they don't anymore. We have developed powerful tools to attribute the degree to which global warming affects extreme events. One study found, for example, that the devastating flooding from Hurricane Florence as it made landfall in North Carolina 4 years ago was as much as 50% greater and 80 kilometers larger due to the warmer ocean. We can also draw upon basic physics, as we explained in Scientific American in 2017. Warmer oceans mean more fuel to strengthen hurricanes, with an average increase in wind speeds of major hurricanes of about 18 meters per hour for each of ocean surface warming, a roughly 13% increase. Since the power of the storm increases roughly the wind speed not only squared but raised to the third power, that amounts to a roughly 44% increase in the destructive potential of these storms. There is also evidence that human-caused warming is increasing the size of these storms. All else being equal, larger storms pile up greater amounts of water, leading to larger storm surges like the 12 to 18 feet estimated for Ian in some locations. Add sea level rise, and that's the better part of foot of additional coastal flooding baked into every single storm surge. If humanity continues to warm the planet and destabilize the Greenland and West Antarctic ice sheets, we could see yards, not feet, of eventual sea level rise. Think of that as a perpetual coastal flooding event. then there is the flooding rainfall, like the 20 inches of it we are seeing across a large swath of Florida with Ian. Simple physics tells us that that amount of moisture that evaporates off the ocean into the atmosphere increases about 7% for each 1 degree Celsius of ocean surface warming. That means 7% more moisture to turn into flooding rains. But that's not the whole story. Stronger storms can entrain more moisture into them, a double whammy that produced the record flooding we saw in Philadelphia a year ago with Hurricane Ida, and the flooding we saw with Harvey in Texas in 2017 and Florence in Carolinas in 2018, the two worst flooding events on record in the U.S.
Food for thought.
Salam. Here are points to ponder on the dynamics of unity and the pitfalls of discord, as elaborated by the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali, peace upon him. Stick to unity and avoid division, and turning away from each other's help, and withholding the hand from one another's assistance.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the right of advice. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host Hussein Hinzano, and in today's lesson, we're talking about the right of advice. Your friend is he who accompanies you, an everlasting wisdom practiced by sensible friends, men and women. that the right of a friend over his friend is that he should advise him. Always remember that an advice is a show of love to the other person. And the other person, he definitely, so long as you call them your friend, they are owning the right of advice from you. Because every man needs advice from others, as he needs to prepare himself to accept advice also. For some people, they might not be very ready, you know, to accept advice from people. But later on, when they're not accepting the advice, they regret in life because they end up doing mistakes. All the human beings in life are created and they're doing mistakes every time. So having an advice from a friend, from someone you love, from someone you are together with, can help you reduce a huge amount of the mistakes that you do in your life. Man's knowledge and experiences are limited, and he has some stimulus in himself, which sometimes pushes him towards good. So sometimes also his knowledge can push him towards evil, and likewise. So there are some elements in man's life which encourage him to perform evil actions. Therefore, unless this particular person finds somebody to advise and guide them, many may fall into dangerous situations. Indeed, somebody who is not well-versed in his life is liable to commit many mistakes in his practical life. Thus, he is in need of somebody to give him advices and knowledge. So sharing an advice is something that we need to look at, and it's a right between two relationships. Whenever you have a friend, you're owing them an advice, and also them are owing you an advice. You are owing each other the right of advice.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano, and we are talking about the right of advice, that two friends owe each other the right of advice. Whenever you have a friend, you need to advise them whenever you can. And them also, they need to advise you because we are not complete. We need each other. We need the advice of someone else in order for it to, you know, carry us along and make us make lesser mistakes in our lives. An advice can make you turn from a distorted person to a good personality, to a good leader in the world. Thus, everyone needs from somebody an advice. So a friend needs from anyone to give him an advice and knowledge. And this definitely may help them to choose the right channel or even the right or social, political, and economic activities. And in choosing this, it causes them to come up with a good act in their life. So it is the right of your friend. It is the right of your friend over you to give him advices and to provide him with your experience in a particular thing, which will help him. It is either that you advise him to leave such a thing if there is danger in it, or to encourage him to act upon it if it is beneficial, or even to prove him with enough guidance and knowledge on that particular matter so as to, you know, use in his action or an issue which he faced it in his life, like studies, marriage, type of work, or buying and selling of goods, or even participating in any social activity. However, because of its importance, giving an advice is sometimes incumbent upon us, and no doubt Allah will punish us if we neglect to advise our fellow brothers on something that may harm them. And our great religion commands us to advise our friends and relatives because it is important. Thank you so much for listening to this show. Until next episode, inshallah, fi amanillah, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Cultural news.
Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With the light.
Foam is fun to play with, particularly for kids, but when it's mixed with art, it also becomes a grown-up matter. And that's what a German artist has done, creating a sea of rainbow-colored foam as an interactive art piece and allowing the audience to enjoy themselves and become part of the art. Colors mixed were by Stephanie Luning were turned into rainbow-hued foam cascading down the stairs. The performance was called Island of Foam, version 18. Excited children jumped in as soon as the bubbly sea reached the base of the stairs, delighted to be playing in the rainbow playground. The art piece is made up of largely of water and a food coloring. The artist says she loves working in public spaces and reaching a broad audience of all ages.
Because I like to be surprised by the result myself, and I like to work with this that you never know how it's going to turn out. You have the wind, the weather conditions, the locations, the audience. You never know how the people are going to respond and how the artwork turns out. And that's really what I like a lot, and also how to reach a broad audience.
However, Stephanie says there's tons of work behind all the fun, and cleaning up the mess can be hard. Interactive art is a form of art that achieves this purpose by involving the audience. The immersive art piece is part of the Greenwich and Docklands International Festival, an annual festival of performing arts and outdoor theatre.
Robots are slowly but surely becoming part of everyday life, taking on human roles in different areas. Now, fast food restaurants can make French fries faster and better as a robot called Flippy 2 takes over the job.
When an order comes in through the restaurant system, it automatically spits out the instructions to Flippy. It takes a frozen product, fries it for the precise amount of time, and puts the finished product in the end. It does it faster, more accurately, more reliably, and happier than most humans do it.
Flippy 2 has been created in a robotic lab in California called MISO after 5 years of efforts by its developers. According to the project engineers, a really good understanding of the food science is needed to make sure the food quality is there, how different food sticks together, and how the temperature and heat affect it. The MISO CEO says the machine can cook several meals with different recipes simultaneously, removing the need for catering staff.
This technology utilizes a whole bunch of computer vision. There's cameras throughout the system, including right here we have these food identification cameras. The cameras not only guide the robot and tell it exactly where it is in space and how to move through this area, but also identifies the food type, and it knows the recipe for each one.
The MISO CEO says tasks like the fry station are the kind that humans are most happy to afloat. The name Flippy comes from the original machine designed to flip burgers, which was not very useful for restaurants. On the outskirts of China's metropolis, Shanghai, a tiny island has been dubbed Cat Island as it provides shelter for stray animals. Since it opened last month, a charity based on the island is taking in cats mainly brought from Shanghai residents. These small carnivorous mammals are neutered and evaluated, and those with good temper and health are allowed to roam free on the island. The city's Stray Cats Management Center says their trap-neuter-release policy is to protect stray cats, limits their population, and maintain ecological balance. However, Shanghai has an estimated 200 stray cats per square kilometer, which means other methods will be needed to control the urban population, stray cats. baby panda twins make their debut appearance at the Chongqing Zoo in southwest China, with visitors flocking to cherish the abundance of cuteness.
Our returnee panda, Ershan, gave birth to the twin brother and sister on July 22nd this year. Currently, the elder brother weighs 4.3 grams and the younger sister weighs 0.6 grams. They're in good condition at present.
The twins' first public appearance was on Saturday, the first day of the week-long National Day holidays. During this week, the pair of giant panda cubs will be on display in the nursery of the panda house of the zoo. Their mother, Ershan, once lived in Canada as a goodwill envoy, but returned to her homeland in 2020. This was Ershan's second delivery of twins. A total of 21 pandas currently live in the Chongqing Zoo, which has been breeding giant pandas since the 1960s. The evolution of robots has been one of the fascinations of recent technological developments. And now the most cutting-edge achievements in that department were presented to the public during a conference in Beijing. The four-day annual World Robot Conference was held both offline and online. It featured three major events, including forum, expo, and competition. On display were more than 500 sets of robots from 130 companies from China and abroad. The conference gave an idea of how the future of humanity will be impacted by the automations. It shows how they can contribute to different sectors, from the restaurant industry and medicine to elderly care, agriculture, and manufacturing.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
An aircraft powered by electricity may still be some way off, but one of its types is already here thanks to a whole range of innovative solutions being developed by aviation firms. American company Aviation Aircraft has debuted its all-electric plane in Washington State. The aircraft, named Alice, took off the runway at Grand County International Airport and flew for 8 minutes. It reached an altitude of 3,500 feet before touching down the ground. According to the company, the aircraft produces no carbon emissions, significantly reduces noise, and costs a fraction to operate compared to usual light jets. The company says it continues to develop and tweak the plane's battery system for an hour flight.
We're targeting a design criteria of 35 minutes for a charge. And so that'll be a charge for the typical route length. It's actually, as I just said, it's actually a design point. So going back to the comment I made earlier about designing batteries for aircraft, it's one of the considerations is how quickly do we want it to charge? How much power do you want to be able to draw from it? So again, we're targeting, call it 30 minutes of charge for an hour of flight time, or about 2C if you're...
The company aims to find its way into the market for trips that sit between 150 and 250 miles, a range that features aircraft similar in size to Alice. It will also be for both commuter and cargo flights. For aircraft manufacturers, this paradigm shift is driving fuel savings in flight and on the ground, reducing carbon footprints and NOx emissions, while also improving reliability and cutting maintenance costs. Many people of the world are supported almost completely by animals because they live in areas unsuitable for animal husbandry. But these days, even some city dwellers are making their living out of animals, like a Virginia girl. Andrea Diaz quit her job at a restaurant and started to rent her pet alpacas to cheer up steer crazy Americans during the pandemic. Since the launch of her business in 2020, it has expanded from 2 to 14 alpacas. Interestingly, 5 with fluffy pets are regularly making a paid appearance at birthdays, weddings, restaurants, and offices. She charges a starting price of $95 per hour. Diaz says the best part is when there are kids' birthday parties, but even it's really a fun for the adults. She calls alpacas a good exposure because they attract people.
In most of its habitats, the heavily trafficked pangolin faces the biggest threat from humans. But in Taiwan, these gentle creatures are exposed to quite a different danger, feral dogs. In the island, a government policy has led to a surge in the population of feral dogs. The pangolins share most of their roaming area with the stray animals. Plus, these scaly animals cannot move as fast as their attackers. When faced with danger, pangolins curl themselves into a ball shape, but the tail still remains at the most outer side, and that's where the dogs hit them hard.
Ecuador's Galapagos National Park is testing different coral replanting methods in an effort to restore fragile underwater ecosystems around local islands.
These corals are important because they are recyclers in the ocean. They convert all the CO2 into oxygen. These corals are important because they are refuges, nurseries, and nursery areas for some fish species.
Coral reef die-offs affect the marine food supply chains and are considered a major climate tipping point. The experimental project is run by park rangers and volunteers in a bay on Santa Cruz Island. Since 2020, they have tested how corals reproduce when they are placed on surfaces like bricks, cement, or tied together and strung on metal frames. They're growing samples in a nursery before adding them to bay. The rangers are reporting improvements with the appearance of new fish near the replanted corals.
A free climber known as the French Spider-Man scales a 48-story skyscraper in Paris to fulfill a goal he set for himself once he reached the age of 60.
A few years back, I promised myself that the day I turn 60, I have to climb the total tower. Because 60 years old marks retirement age in France, and so I thought this would make a very good nod.
Alain Roberts says this building is not as hard as others he has climbed. The French Spider-Man has ascended over 100 of the world's tallest buildings, including the Sydney Tower, the Sears Tower in Chicago, and the Burj Khalifa in Dubai, amongst many others. Roberts says he spent 2 decades climbing mountains before attempting urban climbs. Using his rock climbing experience, he sometimes carries a small bag of climbing chalk to help him grasp the small protrusions of building walls. Many of his climbs can last several hours. The 60-year-old daredevil says he wants to give people the message that age is a number and one can still be active and do sports. A Palestinian farmer has discovered an ancient Byzantine-era mosaic when preparing to plant an olive tree on his plot of land in the Gaza Strip. The farmer and his son have been carefully excavating the area for 3 months since spring. The pair dug out 3 patches, revealing glimpses of an ornate mosaic with intricate images of birds, flora, and tile patterns. Its full size is roughly 23 square meters. The discovery has set off excitement amongst archaeologists. Experts say it is one of the most well-preserved specimens, with precision in graphics and richness in colors. According to archaeologists, the mosaic pavement dates back to the 5th and 7th centuries. Last month, another Palestinian farmer found the rare stone sculpture while working on his land, which dates back to around 2500 BC.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
According to recent surveys, anti-Islamic behavior has increased in Europe, especially in the United Kingdom, in recent years. 7 out of 10 Muslims working in the United Kingdom say they have experienced some form of anti-Islamic treatment. Also, several reports have been published about Islamophobia in England, which showed that British Muslims are among the groups that face the most discrimination. We have taken as some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Turkey's Anadolu news agency writes, a new report warned Islamophobia remains a growing threat across Europe, with several countries enacting policies that have contributed to the institutionalization of an issue that should instead be stamped out with urgency. According to the European Islamophobia Report 2021, Islamophobia was as pressing a problem across the European continent as it was in previous years. It said countries such as Britain and France became the main spots of anti-Muslim hatred and Islamophobic incidents. The report, which focused on 27 European countries and was prepared with contributions from 35 leading academics and experts in the field, read, furthermore, anti-Muslim campaigns of far-right parties in EU member states dominate the discrimination against Muslim individuals and communities. According to statistics revealed on Thursday, 6th of October, Islamophobic hate crimes in England and Wales have skyrocketed last year. According to the British Home Office figures, Muslims became the most targeted religious groups, among others, last year. The number of religious hate crimes recorded by police and targeting Muslims was 3,459 in the year ending March 2022. Showing a 42% increase compared to the previous year. Hate crimes recorded by police in England and Wales have skyrocketed for the year ending March 2022 by 26%. According to British government figures, there were 155,841 hate crimes on record, the biggest increase since the year ending March 2017. The majority of hate crimes were racially motivated, accounting for more than two-thirds of all such offences. The racially motivated hate crimes increased by 19% between the year ending March 2021 and the year ending March 2022, as the crime number for the previous year was 92,063. Religious hate crimes increased by 37% to 8,730 offences, up from 6,383 in the previous year, the highest ever recorded number since the time series began in the year ending March 2012. Apart from Islamophobic incidents across Europe, the European Islamophobia Report 2021 details systemic discrimination faced by Muslims in all areas of life, from employment to healthcare, from education to the justice system. There was a continuing increase in the overall number of reported cases in the United Kingdom, with authorities registering a 9% rise from 2020 to 2021. At least 45% of all religiously aggravated hate crimes involve people of Muslim faith and Muslim background. The report said the number of these crimes have increased by 291% in the past 10 years. The British newspaper The Independent has more. British Muslims shared their fears over rising Islamophobic attacks on mosques in the United Kingdom, warning that the safe refuges of places of worship can be shattered by a single act of hatred. Almost half of mosque or Islamic institutions in the United Kingdom have been targeted by religiously motivated attacks in the last 3 years. A report by MEND and Muslim Consensus revealed the rising rates of Islamophobic hate crimes against places of worship, with 35% of mosques attacked at least once a year. Community leaders are calling for the British government and police to provide better support and funding to help in safeguarding Muslim minority groups from increasing attacks. According to Britain's Home Office, anti-Muslim attacks made up almost half of religiously motivated hate crimes between 2020 and 2021, and this has stayed largely consistent in recent years. One of the impacted communities was in Finsbury Park in North London, where one man, Makram Ali, was killed and 9 others were injured in a terrorist attack in 2017. The chairman of Finsbury Park Mosque, Mohammad Khosbar, said the government, police and local organisations must do more to protect Muslims at risk after his community was one of the many targeted in recent years. On the report, Mohammad Khosbar said, "This is very worrying for the Muslim community and its mosques, as it shows things are going from bad to worse. We're seeing more Islamophobic attacks happen to mosques, institutions and individuals, so it should be taken really seriously. But not only the Muslim community, but by the government and police." The British newspaper The Guardian has more on the story. Calls for a working definition of Islamophobia began in 2019, following the Christchurch mosque shooting in New Zealand, which killed 51 Muslims and caused a 600% surge in Islamophobic incidents in the UK and have continued ever since. British Muslims want the police to take Islamophobic incidents more seriously. They said, "Many times we don't hear feedback or know what's happening with those cases. So at least some of the incidents should result in perpetrators being put to justice, as it will cause anyone thinking of attacking Muslims and attacking mosques to think twice." The Darul Elm Mosque in East Ham in East London faced attacks in April of this year after a group of men armed with bottles and hockey sticks attacked worshippers at the mosque. Nushad Abu Sali Muhammad, one of the trustees of the mosque, described the initial impact and aftermath of the incident. He said, "This has not only physically but emotionally set us back. All the hard work, time and dedication put into establishing a mosque for the Sri Lankan community of East London, a place